We've got Luke's daughter Nathan back in the studio again. He's going to give us the Troy Letter rundown. This week's theme, coding errors.
Well, it's good to be back here in the studio. Let me start with a little bit of breaking-ish news. In last week's Troy Letter, I mentioned that attorneys representing the two sides in Edson Thevenin's widow's federal lawsuit against the city of Troy and Sergeant Randall French. That's the lawsuit that was filed by the widow of a man who was killed after he fled a DWI stop in his car and then was shot by police by Sergeant Randall French. His widow sued the city in federal court. That case is ongoing. I reported last week that they were about to later that Friday afternoon participate in a conference call with a magistrate, sort of a judge that oversees pretrial stuff, to discuss a recent revelation in the case, and that was that the plaintiff, the widow of Edson Thevenin, her attorneys recently learned, apparently through a whistleblower, almost someone who wanted to remain anonymous, that's according to the Times Union's reporting, that the city police department has in its possession we've now learned it's about 60 something pages, internal affairs report related to the shooting that was prepared by a captain. But that this report was not shared during the discovery process, you know, the process before a trial where the two sides share information, that this report was not shared with the plaintiff by the city before now. You know, in turn, the city's council says that the report doesn't have to be disclosed because of a state law that prohibits the release of law enforcement disciplinary records. And the plaintiff's counsel obviously says that that federal law trumps state law, and that basically because it's a federal proceeding, they don't have to. I mean, that the state law doesn't apply to this situation. And just before we were getting ready,
hold on, I'm a little confused.
Please.
So the police withheld the report because it's state law that they don't have to turn it over.
Well, that's the argument they're making now. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the judge says that according to federal law, they do have to surrender it.
That's what I was getting to. The judge just issued a decision today that says that the city will have to turn over this report that it has kept secret until now and hadn't really acknowledged it existed until the plaintiff brought this to light last week. The city will have to turn over a copy of this report to the plaintiff by July 8th. So, you know, it's not clear what if anything new will be in this report. I don't know what this report says. I don't know whether it makes any sort of like final determination as to like whether or not the officer in this case, you know, acted appropriately or not. It's also not clear, and the Times Union said this in their story last week, whether, you know, the Attorney General's office, which previously investigated this whole incident, whether they had access to this report beforehand or not. So, you know, a lot of, but apparently, you know, this report is going to be handed over to the plaintiff's counsel, and, you know, presumably it will become public at some point, which will be interesting to see, now that a judge has ruled, it's not subject to the state law that would keep it secret. You know, unless the city were to appeal this decision, you know, and try to, you know, enjoin the court from forcing them to, in other words, prevent, you know, to try to delay at least them handing over this report. So very interesting. I think discovery disputes are not uncommon like this, but, you know, certainly it's interesting to know that there was this report that otherwise wouldn't have come to light, apparently, unless this, you know, anonymous person, I guess, contacted the plaintiff's attorneys last week or around last week.
Then how many other cases possibly have reports been withheld?
Yeah, I have no idea, but
the implication that that jumps to mind. But
you have to wonder. So, in completely other news, last week I was surfing the web, as I often do, to try to find new weird, interesting stories about Troy, and I found myself on the New York Public Service Commission's website. This is the state agency that regulates utilities and cable franchises and things of that nature. and found that the city of Troy, last year, without much ado, without much fuss, last August, I think it was, filed a complaint with the state against Charter, which is formerly known as Time Warner Cable, basically alleging that the cable company has underpaid what are called franchise fees to the city over a period of time, within the last 10 years. The city had hired this outside firm to basically do an audit on this franchise agreement, and this outside firm found that, in their view, a Charter owes them a bit of money. The way these franchise fees work is basically the agreement in this case says that Charter or its predecessor Time Warner Cable needs to pay the city 5% of, quote, the gross monthly service charges for providing radio and television signals over the system in the city. So basically they need to give the city a small fraction of the money that it takes in from subscriptions and things of that nature. The dispute seems to arise because the city claims that definition of gross monthly service charges includes things like pay-per-view, installation, and other sorts of fees, whereas Time Warner Cable / Charter claims basically that the definition only encompasses basically like monthly subscriptions. So they take a narrower definition of what qualifies as funds that the city can get a cut of. So there's a lot of money at stake. It's, the city had initially said that, over the period from, 2009, through the end of, September, 2015, that Charter, owed the city, almost $800,000. They've now sort of come down a little about, with respect to that. And now, are willing to say, they say that covering the period of 2009 through 2018, Charter owes it, only about a little over $560,000. Still not an inconsiderate amount of money. There was also another issue kind of that the city raised in this dispute. This is getting a little bit into the weeds. I'm just going to try to summarize it as best I can, that Charter had basically identified in its, this is where the term coding errors came from, I think, that they had wrongly coded almost 2,000 addresses as being outside of the city's boundaries, that actually these addresses are within the city. And so then that would be that the city's owed some money from these addresses that they would have, whatever. But Charter has in turn claimed that only about 150 of those addresses were active during that time. So there wouldn't have been that much money at stake anyway. So apparently Charter has proposed a settlement, or in 2018 rather, Charter proposed a settlement of $100,000. The city rejected that offer. And now Charter has offered for about $50,000 to settle just that coding issue. But still, it seems unresolved as far as the larger money that just come from underpayment, or alleged underpayment rather, of the franchise fees related to, you know, that thing I talked about a moment ago with the pay-per-view versus just recurring. So it's not resolved. A spokesperson for the state agency told me that its staff is still investigating the complaint, and the spokesperson didn't give a timeline, you know, for potential resolution. Charter declined to comment beyond what it's filed, and the mayor's office didn't return a request for comment last week. But I link in the story to the actual documents filed in the case. If anyone is a real franchise fee nerd and wants to dig in, they can go check that out. There were a number of zoning and planning matters of interest last week. Probably the most interesting one has to do with a pretty big piece of property that's off of Project Road, right across from where Griswold Heights is. It's right near Carroll Hill Elementary School, kind of, you know, east from downtown, sort of South Troy, east. And basically, there's a proposal to build about 15 single-family homes. It's now kind of been modified. I think it's like four triplex units and one single-family home, but sort of like a suburban-ish kind of like, you know, single-family, pretty low-density kind of use for the property. It was already approved by the ZBA in planning a number of years ago, but when it was approved back with a different applicant than it has now, the applicant and I guess the city had assumed that, and you can see this picture in Troy Letter, that this road that's sort of like an access road to the adjacent elementary school, they had thought that that was a public right of way and that they would be able to use it as an access road to get into this development. They later learned that they don't, that the school district owns that road. It's not a public right of way and that it has no interest in giving access to the potential residents of that development to use that road. Uh-oh. So through a very creative, through a title search, the new applicant of the site, which is Fully In LLC, which has an address in Wineskill, they discovered that they actually hold an easement that dates back decades that crosses the front yard of an adjacent property owner on the other side. And if you can picture this, it's not as if this easement is like across the very front of like a big estate, you know, that it's like going across this person's front yard. Like it's a narrow lot. You know, I think this person's property is only about, you know, a little over a quarter of an acre, in size, or 0.36 acre property it is. And the owner,
was the previous owner that made this agreement.
It was like, it involved, I think, the Troy Housing Authority and the city of Troy. It dates back a while. And I think the purpose was that this land that the development is going to be on used to be owned by a church. And so the church wanted to secure the right to be able to access this property. But bad luck for this person who I guess bought the property that they have where the easement crosses in 2004, but didn't know that this easement covered their property. I would imagine that, you know, a title search would have turned this up. Pretty bad luck. The project applicants, the reason this came before the ZBA and the planning commission is because they had been delayed by all this kind of, this discovery, and they haven't started. So they needed to kind of apply for extensions, which they received. The adjacent owner did attend, both the ZBA and the planning commission meetings and voiced, basically said, you know, that this stinks.
Wouldn't it be nice if they could just use the road that's already there?
You would think.
Not a waste of resources.
And I don't understand, you know, why not, but it was the applicant was very clear that the school district is not interested in giving access to that road. So thus the current course of action. The applicant did say that they'd be willing to buy the easement in fee, but I don't know that that really is much consolation. You know, I don't know how much that sliver of land is really worth, you know, so I don't think the owner is really going to get a big payday from that. So, I don't know.
But there's other zoning board news.
There is. There is also, The ZBA also allowed, there's a pending conversion of the St. Augustine School and Convent in Lansingburg. It had previously been approved by the ZBA for 27 residential units. They came back and approved it for 31 units. The developer said that at the lower density, the project wasn't financially feasible. And then also the Media Alliance, the parent or the organization that operates the sanctuary, was also approved for an area variance and a special use permit for its proposed Nature Lab Center right down the block from here. So that's also sort of exciting. Briefly, I attended last week the Rensselaer County Sheriff's Office's 287G Steering Committee meeting that was held last week at the jail. This is a meeting that, let me back up. The 287 agreement basically allows two corrections officers at the jail to act as ICE agents and basically check inmates' immigration statuses through special computers or software that they have at the jail now. The steering committee is supposed to meet, I guess, annually to solicit like public input and kind of give a primer on what the agreement allows the jail to do. So it was held on Wednesday. I had reported earlier that I had found that the public notice on the sheriff's website, that announcing this meeting, apparently that was the only place where this notice was put. And I found it after the date had already passed by which, according to this notice, the public could register to attend and submit questions. They did end up allowing people to attend anyway, which I think is good. But certainly is a sort of strange way to go about holding a public meeting that's right. Ostensibly about, you know, getting public input and reaching, the public.
And 287G, I mean, what the heck does that mean?
I think it's a provision in like the, some law right, or
but
regulation.
They could come up with a more
descriptive term.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Steering committee.
Sure. We largely heard from the sheriff and other Republican county officials, that they support this program. And we heard from both during and after the meeting, representatives of the NYCLU, ICE Free Capital District, the Troy Area Labor Council, and the Troy branch of the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America, they criticized the way that notice was given for this meeting. And they also, criticized the agreement itself. One argument that was made is that the agreements of this type hurt public safety because it makes immigrants less likely to cooperate with law enforcement. So, during the meeting, an ICE agent gave a presentation on the amount of money that's been brought in or spent and brought in from this agreement, which it's about a wash. The county has spent almost $500 on like costs related to this program and has brought in about $700 in revenue. So
where
it's
does
sort
the,
of
what does
revenue,
the revenue
neutral.
Come from?
I don't know. And they didn't specify. So take that number as you will.
Making money on checking immigration status.
And they said that the two corrections officers who have been designated as ICE agents have investigated the immigration statuses of 137 individuals in custody, basically checked their status. But the program has only resulted in the arrest of or detention of three individuals under this program. So,
well, this 18 minutes went by really quickly.
Yeah, it really did.
So you can go read the full Troy letter where?
tinyletter.com/Troy_letter or you can sign up that way, or you can email me luke.s.nathan@gmail.com and say I want Troy Letter. Yes.
And I ask you every week, how can we support Troy Letter?
I have a Patreon, patreon.com/Troy Letter, where you can chip in to support this project if you so desire.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
Awesome.